Good morning, everyone. It's 9 o'clock. Time to get started with the Safety and Service Delivery Committee. I'd like to start with a safety brief from Mr. Pat Lavin. Pat?
Good morning. In case of an emergency, we're going to egress through the main doors. We'll close this exit illuminated by an exit sign. We'll assemble at the lawn of the National Building Museum across the street. There's an automated external defibrillator, which is available behind the guard station. Fire extinguishers are strategically located throughout the building. Restrooms are located past the guard desk on the left. This morning's safety contact is National Bike Month. May is National Bike Month, with next Friday being Bike to Work Day. With this event and recent warm weather, everyone should be aware of additional cyclists on the street. Drivers are reminded to turn on vehicle headlights at dusk and be vigilant in looking out for cyclists and pedestrians. When traveling on city streets, cyclists should follow the same rules of the road as motorized vehicles. This means stopping at stop signs, obeying traffic signals and lane markings, and using hand signals to let others know your intention to stop or to turn. The following video is a public service announcement from the AAA. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lavin. We've got a full agenda today, and we're going to have to get into a couple of administrative items. But first, I'd like to welcome Mr. Clarence Crawford, who is now Vice Chair of the Safety Service Delivery Committee. He's representing Maryland. And welcome, Mr. Crawford.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here and to do what I can to help. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, there's plenty of work for all of us here, so that's great. All right. Thank you, Mr. Lavin. First on our agenda, a couple of administrative business items. First, the approval of the agenda. If there are no objections to the agenda, the agenda is approved as presented. Any objections? Seeing none, approved. Next, the approval of minutes of the April 12th, 2018 meeting. I'd like to ask for a motion from a committee member to approve the minutes of our April 12th session. Can I get a motion to approve a set of minutes? And a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the minutes are approved. Now that we've addressed the committee's administrative business, we can begin our meeting today. As I said, we have a full agenda, a lot of interesting subjects. The first is an overview from Chief Safety Officer Lavin on the various methods that are available to employees to report safety issues and unsafe conditions. So he'll walk us through that, and we'll have a chance to ask some questions. Next, Chief Performance Officer Andrea Burnside and Mr. Lavin will update the committee on Metro's performance through the third quarter of the fiscal year. And I'm pleased to note that out of the 23 measures being reported, 15 of those were at or above target or showing improvement from last year. So that's good news. Two additional measures are near target. These measures include rail reliability and bus on-time performance and underscore the need for regular preventative maintenance. Now, these numbers are very interesting. They do show areas where we need to continue to make improvement, but they also show the tremendous progress that's taken place over the last couple of years. Following that, General Manager Wiedefeld will introduce the preventative maintenance item. Then Assistant General Manager of Rail Operations Andy Off and Chief of Maintenance Away Engineering Laura Mason will provide a progress report of the first 9 months of Metro's preventative maintenance program. Following SafeTrack, Metro launched its preventative maintenance program, a two-year program designed to reduce track delay incidents by 50%. Today, staff will ask the board to reaffirm Metro's current hours of service, allowing for the continuation of this important program. Finally, Director of Intermodal Strategic Planning, Jim Hughes, will ask the committee's approval to pilot cash-free boarding on Metro Extra Route 79, along with authorization for a public hearing to gather feedback on an overall cash-free boarding program pending successful completion of this pilot. So, again, a very full agenda. Should be an interesting meeting. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Lavin to begin discussion on the first item. Mr. Lavin.
Thank you. The first item is employee reporting systems. So WMATA has adopted the SMS model, which was put in place by the FTA back in 2013. There are four pillars to SMS. The first is safety management policy, which is a statement reflecting the organization's commitment to safety. It should be noted that the board affirmed WMATA's SMS policy last May in 2017. Safety risk management is the process that comprises activities aimed at identifications of hazards in the operating environment and the control of those hazards. Safety assurance is the process that comprises activities to ensure that the initial control of consequences implemented during a safety risk management activities are working as expected. And safety promotion is a combination of training and communication of safety information to support the implementation and operation of SMS within the organization. While reactive analysis can produce good information regarding operational and safety condition, it is often the result of an incident occurring. Additionally, the reactive approach consumes greater resources, such as employees' lost time days, cost of training replacement, loss of efficiency in production, administration time, and loss of morale. Proactive analysis can identify safety hazards and concerns by using leading indicators before catastrophic loss. By viewing the conditions that may lead to an unsafe act, proactive measures can be instituted that would either eliminate or reduce the likelihood of a hazardous condition being present. The table above shows several of the methods present that can be used to proactively surface safety concerns. So we're obviously trying to move from a more reactive to proactive standpoint. Reporting hazards. Frontline employees have a good understanding of the systems and what hazards exist. Employees have several methods to report hazards, which are covered in the following slide. Once the hazard has been identified, management has two main roles: to address and mitigate the hazard, and if able, to completely eliminate it in a timely manner, and to encourage and thank employees for reporting safety concerns to build trust and a strong safety culture. As part of the safety hotline process, SAFE routinely calls employees to update them on the progress and resolution of their safety concerns. There are several ways an employee can report a hazard. They can report directly to the lead employee, supervisor, manager, or safety rep. They can raise the concern at a safety committee meeting. I've embedded safety officers at all the local safety meetings to try to harvest this information. They can contact one of the control centers, whether it be the MOC, the ROC, or the BOC. For immediate hazards, they can use the safety hotline, the OIG, or they can use the close call reporting system. The safety hotline is one of the main avenues where hazards are tracked for identification to mitigation, while being historically recorded for trending and analysis purposes. The above chart shows the reporting volume for the three main methods. In addition, each hotline item is assigned to a safety officer to ensure follow-up, accountability, and closure. Approximately 86% of safety concerns are received via the safety hotline, while 11% are through the close call program and 3% are from the OIG's office. The reports are independently tracked and monitored. All hazards identified are incorporated into the hazard management process. Safety hotline calls are responded to immediately. OIG referred calls are transferred to the safety hotline for trending and analysis. The close call system is managed via DOT's Bureau of Transportation Statistics, while WMATA management is responsible for addressing the safety issues. The above slide shows the report volume per calendar year. Based on the calls received so far this year, the calls are trending to exceed 500 by the end of the year. That's a good thing. That means that more employees are engaged in the process. This indicates that the recent outreach efforts are effective and employees feel empowered and confident to report hazardous conditions. This chart shows the variety of calls received. Of the volume of reports, 63% are facility-related that range from housekeeping issues to pest extermination. Other categories include policy, procedures, and rules, OSHA general safety issues, employee management issues, security, infrastructure, and environmental services. Safety promotion is an important element of SMS. Cross-departmental communication, hazard awareness sharing is critical. Promotion and promotion of the safety hotline. We actually put out a bulletin in October to emphasize this, which has been showing progress and yielding a good number of calls. Safety bulletins are typically produced when a highly ranked hazard is identified or a high probability or impact on an employee. Safe released 20 safety bulletins in 2017, 12 bulletins that have been released in 2018 so far. This is above example of an employee that brought a concern about recent lanyards that were distributed with Metro's new ID cards. The employee not only submitted a video, which the hazard is not breakaway as required, but also provided a no-cost solution. The employees were recognized at the last Executive Safety Committee, along with other employees that brought high-impact hazards to the attention of SAFE via the safety hotline. I believe we have a video.
For the safety department to show how the quick release on this lanyard is failing to operate properly. When we pull it, no matter how hard I'm pulling on it, it's failing to release. You see how hard I got to pull it because it was placed on the back of the neck. Now, if I put it to my side, like to the side of my body, and I pull on it, it releases real easy. So by placing it on the back of the neck, the lanyard is failing to release. And you can see here that it even failed before it did its job and released properly. Thank you.
So I just want to emphasize, this to me was a very innovative way to bring forth the safety concern. So this individual, along with the two other participants of the video, were given an award at the last committee meeting. The analysis of employee safety reporting data focuses on WMATA efforts of where the risk truly lies. A proactive safety culture encourages employees reporting of hazards and ensure management follow-up, analyzes all available safety hazard reporting methods and systems to effectively identify areas of risk and possible trends. It pays to invest in mitigating to avoid investigating. The safety department is also being held accountable to resolve safety problems and provide feedback to employees. All calls are logged in our system and tracked by senior leadership. There is also a safety hotline service posted for those individuals that provide a mechanism of contacting them, i.e. an email, where the hotline participants are asked to review the process and to solicit feedback on the process. Results are then shared at the Executive Safety Committee. This is something I just implemented, so as we collect data, I'll report out on at the ESC. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Lab, and I got a few questions here. First of all, why is it important for those lanyards to release? I'm not sure everybody understands the hazard it presents.
So on a minor scale, you could be walking, you get grabbed, you could jerk your neck. On a grand scale, if you happen to be on the tracks, you shouldn't be wearing a lanyard to begin with. Your vest should be, you know, in your pocket. You could potentially get dragged by a vehicle or something else. So it is a serious safety risk.
So essentially, without this quick release, you could be dragged by the neck by equipment or could get caught in moving equipment, other things, right?
Correct.
Okay. You've been here since 2016, I believe.
Today is 2 years and
1 day. 2 years. Well, congratulations.
Very good.
2 years here. How much of these reporting systems were in place when you arrived?
They were all in place. I just don't think that they were yielding the outcomes that I wanted, so we worked very closely with BTS. I embedded senior leadership into those meetings to harvest more information. When I got here, I think there was something like over 300 open safety hotline complaints that hadn't been addressed. I focused staff on it. That number's down now to, I believe, somewhere around 89. And that includes the ones that came in within the last 2 years.
So your department basically works to resolve all the reports that come in, correct?
Right, cooperatively with my partners in the operations out of the house.
So one more question. I'll turn it over to the rest of the committee here. You have basically three types of reportings. You have reportings to the safety hotline. You have reportings to BTS on this confidential close call system. And you have reports to OIG. What's the difference between that reporting? I mean, what kind of incidents do you report to OIG? What do you report to BTS? What do you report to the safety hotline, or does it matter?
It generally doesn't matter, but I think it's really the perspective of the employee that drives that, because a lot of the information that we get in close call we'll also receive through the safety hotline. But But there's a, you know, a true sense to some employees of retaliation. The close call system gives you that level of protection where your anonymity is guaranteed. You know, there's SIPC laws that protect it. So I really think those are driven by the perspective of the employees. I think it's encouraging that we see most of this information coming through the safety hotline, which also has an anonymous feature if they want to exercise it. But I just think it shows, you know, that employees are gravitating more towards a trust safety culture.
So an employee that knows of a safety issue has multiple ways to report it and get it to the attention of management, correct?
They did.
All right, thank you. Mr. Crawford, do you have anything?
No.
Okay, Ms. Hudgens?
So this report does not. But what I started doing is we're now partnering with media relations, and we're taking the customer complaints as well, and we're now graphing those to see where those lie. But that's something we're moving towards.
Any other questions? Seeing none, let's move on to the next topic. And Ms. Burnside and Mr. Lavner are going to talk about quarterly Metro performance report.
Okay, thank you and good morning. Move to the next slide. So this is just a snapshot. We're talking today about the third quarter of FY 2018 performance, fiscal year to date, so that's through March. And as you can see on the snapshot here with our high-level KPIs, it's organized by our agency priorities of quality service, safety and security, and financial responsibility. And I'll be going into each of these as we go forward in the report. Next slide. Okay, starting with quality service. My trip time, which is our rail customer on-time performance KPI, more customers were on time and delays were less severe in fiscal year 18 as compared to last year. Rail customer on-time performance improved to 87% during the first three quarters of FY 18. And I'll cheat a little bit and look ahead into the last couple months of April and May, and we're actually up to 88.2%. So that's right at our target. Rail car delays remain the most frequent type of delay, but are down almost 20% thanks to changes in the fleet composition and improved maintenance. And the next slide will go into more details about that. While our infrastructure renewal program lowers on-time performance by about 2 to 3 percentage points in the short run, as we reduce our service at nights and on the weekends, overall rail infrastructure reliability is showing signs of improvement. Electrical and smoke incidents are down, track incidents are down, and emergency maintenance requests are down. You'll be hearing more about that today. Bringing and keeping the system into a state of good repair, however, requires constant maintenance and renewal. Next slide. Rail car performance continues to be the best reported in 8 years. It exceeds our target, reaching almost 87,000 miles between delays. What this means for customers is almost a 40% fewer offloads. The 7,000 series rail cars now represents over 45% of the available fleet and are the top performers, traveling over 122,000 miles between delays. With over 520 of those cars in service, we've begun the process of retiring our poorest performing fleet of 192 5,000 series cars. We continue to invest in improving the performance of our legacy fleet by ensuring that the right work is done at the right time by the right people. We've increased inspections in order to identify problems earlier, replace components before they fail, updated and improved inspection procedures, and create dedicated inspection teams. And all those together are leading to our good performance. Next slide. On average, this fiscal year, 94% of track has been available during passenger hours. Speed restrictions related to power consumptions in the core did reduce availability by 3.8%. But very importantly, have had limited impact on on-time performance for customers. We're actively assessing these conditions and anticipate recommending removing the restriction in summer of 2018. unplanned single tracking and other condition-related speed restrictions further reduced availability by 0.4%. Planned maintenance work during evenings and weekends reduced availability by 1.5%. So by 10 p.m., almost every weeknight, crews have begun working on the track to address things like tunnel leaks, renew rail infrastructure, and conduct preventive maintenance. This aggressive infrastructure renewal, inspection, and preventive maintenance program aims to reduce unplanned single tracking events and speed restrictions. Bus on-time performance continues to improve, meeting the target with the best third quarter results since reporting began in late 2010. Buses were on time 79% during the first three quarters of the year, with fewer buses running late compared to last year. On-time performance improved across all days of the week and during all service periods, with 3% more on-time buses during the weekday and 2% more on-time buses during the weekends. Rush service periods have seen the biggest decreases in buses running late. Improvements in on-time performance have been largely driven by schedule adjustments for low-performing bus routes. The schedule adjustments that were implemented in June 2017 and December have improved performance 2% compared to last year. And I believe later in the summer we have a presentation to this committee about some of those strategies for on-time performance on the bus side to give you more information about that. Bus fleet reliability performance continues to be impacted by the increased use of older, less reliable buses, as our newer buses have had to be removed from service to address safety concerns. As you're aware, beginning in late September 2017, we had to take 105 of our 8,000 series hybrid buses out of service. Those have all been returned to service as of now. And then from March 28 through April 2018, 164 New Flyer CNG buses were removed from service after two buses suddenly shut down while carrying riders. Those were all returned to service as of this report, after we made implementation, after we implemented fixes recommended by New Flyer, the manufacturer. Buses, on average, given all these factors, traveled 7,174 miles before service interruptions during the first three quarters. That's a 14% decline over last year. Someone did ask me to, like, if we looked further back in time, what does bus fleet reliability look like over a longer period than just 3 years, as you can see on the screen here? I looked back as far as 2012, and I found that it generally varies around the 7,000s, 8,000s. So we had, in 2012, it was about 7,800, 2013, 8,300, 2014, 7,300, and then 7,100. If I looked at the very highs and the very lows over the long term, we had a monthly high in February 2017 of 98,81, and our lowest I could find was 58,79. So it, you know, it goes up and down, and the key thing is that impacts reliability of bus fleet is continuing to regularly replace our older buses. As they get older, they start to break down, they require more maintenance. Annual midlife overhauls, which we do 100 a year. Retrofitting and proactively replacing different subsystems and parts. And then obviously address if safety issues come up as we've had this year, those can impact performance as they have it this quarter. Next slide. Metro Access on-time performance improved to 92% compared to 87% through the same period last year. As you may recall, last year we had some issues with our contractually, with our contractor having some operator staffing levels, and those staffing level issues have been alleviated. The new operators have adjusted to their roles, and the performance is at 92%. That's our contractually enforced service level agreement with our vendor, our paratransit providers. Fiscal year-to-date escalator availability is 94%. That equals pretty much the same performance as last year and exceeds our target. Our preventive maintenance compliance is a key driver of this. Each month this quarter, staff completed 97% or more of those scheduled PMs. Our aggressive and expansive plan to replace a number of escalators across the system is on schedule. To date, 91 escalators have been rehabbed and 42 units are remaining. We're also looking to see if there's other units that we can add to the replacement list. On the elevator side, we're at 97%. That also equals performance through last year and meets our target. As with escalators, PM compliance is a key driver of this. The Office of Elevators and Escalators is currently revising their PM procedures and tailoring them to address each unique type of elevator model. Our plan to rehab over a third of elevators across the system is on schedule. We've rehabbed 52, and there's 48 remaining. The fiscal year-to-date crime rate decreased 18% compared to last year. Crimes against property, which is about 69% of those Part 1 crimes, decreased 20%. Crimes against persons, which is 31% of Part 1 crimes, decreased 13%. The combined crime rate of 4.0 crimes per million passenger trips represents the lowest rate in recent years. We're continuing to invest in our CCTV closed-circuit television. We adjust our tactics and deployments based on crime analysis. We have Metro Stout where they meet on a regular basis to review crime and adjust the strategies, and also sustaining our fair evasion initiative. And now I'll turn it over to Pat to talk about the safety metrics.
So this will be the safety focus of the presentation. First, we'll discuss red signal overruns. For fiscal year 2018, train and equipment operators violated 50% fewer red signals than last year, with 7 incidents occurring from July through March. There were 4 incidents in both the third quarters of fiscal year 17 and 18. To address red signal violations, on the right side there is the list of activities we're doing, which has to do with track sign maintenance, cleaning and replacement, yard safety briefings on each shift by interlocking operators, signal head upgrades, which includes the replacement of the bulbs to LEDs, new lenses and new nameplates, right side signal configuration, which means we're trying to put on all the new contracts, all the signals on the right side of the train operator, diverging route signal consistency, where they'll get a flashing lunar if there's a diverging route, line familiarization train or operator for train and equipment operators, and improved communication with roadway maintenance machines via the use of headphones between the person and the prime mover and the flagger on the front of the consist. Next, we'll talk about fire incidents. For fiscal year 2018, there were 8% fewer fires than last year, with 66 incidents occurring from July through March. When we compare fiscal year, the third quarter of 17 to 18, there was actually a 47% reduction in fires for that three-month period. There were no arcing insulators for 3 of the 9 months in fiscal year 18. WMATA continues to make progress with its tunnel water intrusion abatement projects and is proactively removing debris from the rail right-of-way. Additionally, traction power maintenance has been continuing its measuring program to ensure the cables are within their useful life. A more detailed description of these activities will be provided in the next presentation that focuses on preventive maintenance. Rail collisions. For fiscal year 18, there were 38% fewer rail collisions than last year, with 8 incidents occurring from July through March. For this quarter, a train struck a scissor gate that was intentionally placed on a roadway by a customer. Another train made an undesired coupling in New Carrollton Yard that resulted in a bump post contact. The RMM was involved in a prime mover making contact with the stationary de-icer, and the boom of a prime mover crane making contact with a tunnel ceiling while in motion. To address the hazards present, the following key actions are being taken. Operator training on safe train movements in yard, efficiency testing for speed compliance, yard stops, shop and yard moves, improved roadway maintenance machine communication procedures, revitalized line familiarization training for train operators and equipment operators that also focuses on the communication piece, and deployed new training for flagmen and any person who may perform this task, i.e. equipment operators and track repairers, to improve communication. Next is derailments. For fiscal year 2018, there were 15 fewer derailments than last year, with 11 incidents from July through March. There were 5 incidents in the third quarter of 2018. 2 involved passenger trains. 1 was carrying passengers at the time of the derailment. There was 1 minor off-duty injury to an employee. That's the incident that occurred at Farragut North. The other 3 derailments involved rail maintenance machines, a high rail truck, a tie crane, and a pulled rail cart. We're also looking at the suspension systems of the high rail vehicles and the process of them negotiating crossovers to reduce these incidents. We're also looking to retire the rail carts and use flat cars to reduce those types of derailments. The next is bus collisions. For fiscal year 2018, there was a 4.5% increase in bus collision rates when compared to last year. The overall collision rate for fiscal year 2018 rate was nearly 63 collisions per million miles, which is a 13% increase from the third quarter of fiscal year 2017, while non-provisional collisions rate increased by 2%, the preventable collision rate increased by 8%. While MARTA continues to gather collision data for deceleration light and pedestrian strobe lights to determine their effectiveness in reducing rear-ended and pedestrian collisions respectively. In addition, Bus Transportation formed the Fixed Object Collision Reduction Committee to identify common factors in these collisions. Finally, the five top intersections specific to MARTA bus collisions were identified. A thorough safety review is being conducted in these locations to include an analysis of realistic traffic flow, bus stop placement, traffic light cycles, and interviews with impacted operators to gain additional perspectives of the challenges they routinely face. So just to give this some perspective, last week, or the week before, we had a no meetings day. I went out to 17th and K, which is the worst intersection. I looked at it. I interviewed the two dispatchers that were there. We eventually brought them in. We actually brought in the PM dispatchers as well just to get their perspective on this because the traffic pattern during the day and the traffic pattern on the PM were very different. They gave us a lot of suggestions. We're going to take that back, summarize it. At the JCC meeting last week, I spoke to the regional partners. They're willing to actually send traffic analysts out to look at these intersections. So I plan on acting on that in the future. For pedestrian bus strikes, for fiscal year 18, there was a 29% fewer pedestrian strikes than last year, with 10 incidents from July through March. Pedestrian strikes also decreased when comparing third quarter 3 incidents versus 17, in which there were 5 incidents. One of the major initiatives to increase bus visibility was the installation of strobe lights on the front end of the fleet. This data is being monitored and analyzed to determine its effectiveness as the data measures. Rail customer injuries, there was a 1% decrease in rail customer injury rate when compared to last year. 189 rail passengers have been injured since July. This resulted in a customer injury rate of less than 1.5 injuries per million passenger trips. The injuries are primarily driven by slip, trips, and falls on escalators and station platforms. Primary causal factors include customer inattention and intoxication. The most common locations are Gallery Place, Lafont, Metro Center, and Union Station. The key actions include automated escalator announcements, program expansion. We started that at Gallery. We're looking to expand it to the other areas, you know, where we're having escalator incidents. We replaced and installed new optimal boarding signage location for ADA and the installation of platform cameras at the train operator's position at Silver Spring in Brooklyn to assist in platform observations. Bus customer injuries, there was a 12% increase in bus customer injury rate when compared to last year. The leading driver for this increase are non-preventable vehicle collisions that caused injuries, which increased by 24%. 239 customers have been injured since last July. During fiscal year 2018, which is a 12% increase from fiscal year 2017. The main injury type of those occurred as a result of a collision. The remaining injuries included 78 slip, trips, and fall incidents. These injuries occurred primarily due to hard braking events while the bus was in motion, e.g. turning, leaving a stop, or stopping in traffic. A recent key action to reduce injuries related to bus wheelchair lift injuries involved conducting a hazard assessment of its use. This assessment, which began last week, reviews the lift functionality and circumstances surrounding the incidents when the lifts are involved. The majority of lift injuries occur while passengers are stepping on and off or tripping on the lip of the lift. So what we did is we brought in the people who do our JHAs. Some of them are the same ones who looked at the metro access injuries. So we're looking to cut down on the rail chair lift injuries as well as the slip, trips, and falls. Metro Access customer injuries. There was a 2.5 decrease in Metro Access customer injuries rate when compared to last year. 44 Access passengers have been injured since last July. The reduction in customer injury correlates with a significant reduction in preventable collisions. Customer slips, trips, and falls were also reduced over this period. Key actions include operator training, the use of an occupational therapist to evaluate transferring individuals from their home to the vehicle and vice versa, and the acquisition of new vehicles with improved design. The rail employee injury rates, there was a 4% decrease in rail employee injury rates when compared to last year. This decrease is primarily due to decreases in injuries by the maintenance groups, and key actions include fare evasion reduction strategy to reduce assaults on station managers, a review and update on work instructions and conjunction with job hazard analysis, continued observation by and support and safe support during overnight maintenance activities, establishment of an RWP compliance group within SAFE, improved injury investigation among rail and maintenance department. And the final slide is bus employee injuries. There was a 54% increase in bus employee injury rate when compared to last year. Bus transportation's employee injury rate increases primarily driven by increases in ergonomic-related slip, trip, and fall injuries, while bus maintenance experienced an increase in slip, trip, and fall and struck by against injuries. In response to the overall increase in employee injuries, the bus developed and implemented the Bounce Back to Work program for workers returning from a lost time injury. This program discusses techniques and strategies to reduce an employee exposure to workplace hazards. In addition, bus continues to partner with the MTPD to provide officer presence on bus routes with higher occurrences of fare evasion, as well as facilitating bus operator assault reduction training workshops. Finally, the ergonomic assessment was conducted last week of the operator's compartment. This assessment will review how operators adjust their seat steering wheel, as well as review video injuries that were the result of poor ergonomic conditions, e.g. poor hand placement on the steering wheel, which results in wrist injuries when a pothole is struck. So that JHA occurred last week. We're waiting for the results.
Moving to our, it works actually. I thought it was supposed to turn right. Moving to our fiscal responsibility focus. So we have our balanced scorecard. We have three KPIs for fiscal responsibility. I will note that immediately following this committee, I believe you all are hearing the third quarter financial report as part of the finance committee. So I'm only going to touch briefly because I know we have a lot of committee items. So next slide, ridership. Our ridership of 212.4 million is 3% below the budget forecast of 219.7 million. Rail ridership levels are similar to last year, while bus ridership has continued to decline. And you can see on the chart there that rail ridership is 128.1 million, which is about 2% below forecast. Bus ridership was 82.6 million, 5.1% below forecast. Metro Access ridership was 1.7 million. I will note that this is a national trend, ridership reductions around the nation. And the American Public Transportation Association recently presented a paper on this trend, kind of looking at what's triggering a lot of discussions around the country and the factors that influence and cause declines. Their key findings were that erosion of time competitiveness, reduced affinity, erosion of cost competitiveness, and a variety of external factors. So that's kind of the national trends. And we continue to do our own analysis of Metro to look at what's driving our ridership impacts. Next slide. We are meeting our net operating position at $18.1 million favorable year to date, and that's because we have below budget expenses, which have exceeded our revenue shortfalls. So that resulted in a balanced budget. Next slide, capital funds invested. 65% of our capital budget was invested fiscal year to date compared to the originally budgeted amount of 72% we would have expected at this time. However, our end of year forecast anticipates higher investment in the fourth quarter so that we would end the year at between 94 to 100% capital funds invested. And as I said, that will be a discussion item for our next meeting. And that concludes our presentation.
Well, thank you very much. Very comprehensive report. Lots of information in here, and a lot that Metro should be congratulated on. When I look at some of the rail parameters, on-time performance up, fleet reliability, that's very telling, up to almost 87,000 miles between failure. And the offloads. The offloads is a very important concept because that makes more people angry than anything else, I think. And the fact that offloads are down, you know, I thank you for that. So I think that's a very, very telling statistic right there. It seems that with the safety parameters, there's still work to do in this area. Red signals are coming under control, but one red signal bypass is one too many. Fires continue to be an issue, but they are moving in the right direction. Rail collisions are down, and derailments are down, although we had a fairly serious derailment this year. So I would assume that a lot of the maintenance that's being done that we're going to hear about in a minute would affect some of these parameters. Is that your impression, Pat?
It absolutely is, and that's probably one of the most key factors in the success we've been having is these preventive maintenance programs.
And I note that on the bus side, you know, it looks like there's still a lot of work to do there. Reliability is down, on-time performance is down, and really that's an area that we probably need to spend some more time. And I'm happy to hear that you're looking at some of these issues. So that's probably fertile ground for the next year to look a little bit closer at the bus operations. The you know, I know we'll talk about this more in the next meeting, but the ridership, you know, is a little bit distressing. We're providing a much better service, I think, than we have for the last couple of years, and yet the ridership continues to be challenging. So I know that we have lots of different programs. We have the payback program when a train's late or a bus is late. I know we have programs trying to get passengers back on the bus and on the rail, but to me, with these types of reports, this is a good time for people to come back to Metro and continue to use the service for their transportation needs. Things are getting better, and I have faith that it'll get even better as years go on. Do we have any questions on this, Mr. Crawford?
Yes, I'm. I want to compliment Metro on the performance. Not many years ago, I was downtown a couple of times and offloading, so I know what that feels like. And I know how hard it is to communicate good news. Bad news is easy. It's on the front page of the Washington Post. But thinking about ways to communicate the good news about the performance and the on-time, perhaps even posting some of these key metrics in the rail cars or on the buses might be a way to help. I'm also concerned about the ridership and the national trend, and we have certain limitations and restrictions. We have a rail system that's defined and need for buses, but just wonder as we look to the future, is there a way to start to really think about getting out in front of the ridership issue? Could we think about changes to match sort of changes in usage? I don't know. But just, you know, just thinking about how we would address it. It's one thing to say that it's a national trend. It's another thing to try to figure out, okay, now how do we operationalize this? Are there opportunities for us to begin to get out in front of this and maybe even leverage some of these changes to our benefit?
Can I respond to that? Actually, yes, staff is putting a lot of thought and analysis to that. And so even today you're going to be hearing about a pilot for a cash-free bus. Yes. So one of the things on the bus side that our customers value is, you know, their time. Everyone values their time. So as mentioned in the national trends, as the buses slow down and get bogged down in traffic, one of the things that we're looking at is how can we speed the buses up. There's multiple ways to do that. One is to reduce the delays from when people are using cash on the bus. So we're thinking a lot about that on the bus side. On the rail side, it's all about reliability. And as you know, we're working very hard on that.
Yeah. I wonder even maybe just something crazy, like even putting Wi-Fi on those buses, on certain buses, again, to sort of attract millennials. But just crazy ideas. Thank you very much. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Some good points. Certainly, we do have the advantage over the national trends, I think, because we have the worst traffic in the country. That to me, would help the discussion on maybe we'll take the train or maybe I'll sit in the bus and read a book, you know. But maybe that's a driving factor. Ms. Hudgens, do you have any questions?
I first wanted to compliment you because I think the report reflects a lot of progress. But Mr. Levin, I think it was part of your presentation in which you talked about the Metro Access piece and the changes, and you alluded to some change in operational staff. And can you expand on that and understand why, what you see as what you've done and what you see in the long term that should be continued in that part?
Okay. If I said operational staff, that was a mischaracterization.
Okay.
It was actually operational practices.
Okay.
So what we had done, and I believe I've reported out before on this, and I have to get, I think I owe you a progress update sometime in August. But we were looking at the injuries to customers. A lot of these were mobility issues between getting the person from their front door to the van and vice versa, where we were actually, you know, just a couple simple strategies like saying, you know, is it okay if you take my arm? Or just to give them additional support, we brought in occupational therapists to train the operators on how to give this additional support. And that actually had a very good impact on reducing customer injuries. We now have the occupational therapist on the other side of the house looking at some of these ramp injuries to see if we can do things to, you know, make the ramp more conspicuous or other strategies to aid the bus operators in reducing those types of injuries.
Well, thank you, because I think that information is very important for the public, because as we all know, you gain a reputation and that reputation stays. And so I think this is a very important part to really highlight, because what we hear is that Metro Access is difficult to use, and that becomes the I think the story. But I really do think you have a good story to tell, and that in a way, any way you can to highlight that, because it's important that in using the alternative system, but using the system we have, we need a balance in order to reach the larger population, and that's very critical to the region. Yeah.
I agree, and I'll take that back to the media relations people.
Thank you.
Mr. Marusha.
You mentioned 17 and K as one of the problematic intersections. Can you provide us with a list of the others?
I can. Great. But these, I just want to question you. So there's two lists going around. One is all the bad accidents in all the areas. The ones I focused on were specific to bus. So it may not match what, you know, was out there publicly. This is our internal. I can't, I'll just email it to you if you like, but I have it if you want.
All right, any other questions on this subject? Seeing none, I guess we're ready to go to the next one. I don't see Mr. Wiedefeld in the room. Is he? So we have a variety of people here to talk about a preventative maintenance update, and I know Mr. Wiedefeld was going to say something at the beginning. And then we need to do a cash-free bus pilot discussion. And both of these items are action items, which means this committee has to vote on it. So let's not forget to vote on it when we finish the discussions. And we'll need motions from committee members, seconds, and then we'll vote to move these topics forward to the full board for their consideration at the next meeting.
Two options. We could wait for John to come back and tell us what the status of the GM is, or Laura's comfortable giving the presentation. So,
well, why don't we start? And hold on. All right. It's been suggested that we do the cash-free bus presentation first, and then give Mr. Wiedefeld a chance to clean up the other whatever he's doing, the other committee meeting, and then we can. Go to the preventative maintenance update, and I'd like to give him that opportunity. I think it's important to him, and I think he has some interesting stuff to say. So with the committee's permission, we'll change the order. We'll go to the cash-free bus first. Okay, I see no objections, so let's try doing that. And we have Mr. Hughes.
Good morning, everybody. Today to present a proposal to seek the committee's approval to our pilot of cash-free boarding on one of our Metro Extra routes, Route 79. We're also seeking the committee's authorization to our public hearing for the pilot program. And while we're out to the public soliciting input, we want to solicit input on expanding the possibility of expanding the program to other Metro Extra services. This input will give us information on what we need to develop a plan, what we follow in the pilot. A little bit of background on boarding. About a third of the time a bus is in service, it's sitting at the bus stop loading and unloading passengers. Currently, 88% of all Metro bus riders utilize Smart Trips, and only about 12% are using cash or adding cash while they use their Smart Trip card. Transactions do take longer. That's longer than a Smart Trip transaction, as the chart shows. Smart Trip takes about 2 to 4 seconds every time someone gets on and taps the bus. It takes about 11 seconds when they're using cash to board, and it takes about 17 seconds when they use their Smart Trip and then add a value to it. Cash reboarding reduces travel time. The goal of this is just to get the boarding time reduced, make the overall travel time for our customers faster. Cash reboarding is something that's happening more and more around the country. It's becoming more of an industry standard. Other major cities are trying it. Boston has proposed a cash reprogram system-wide within 2 to 3 years. New York City is exploring the options. Presently speak, even locally, ride on an express limited stop service they have, and dash services don't allow reloading on the buses, trying to get, again, to get a service they've offered. The pilot program, we proposed a pilot program on our Metro Edge 79 route to start. It's a 6-month pilot we're proposing, and the map on in front of you shows the 79 route. And in blue, that is the 70 route. You see one overlaid. One's an express route, one's a local route. Wherever the express stops, there's a local there, there's more stops on the local. So people have an option. We started the 79, it was our first Metro Extra service we started, where we were segmenting riders between local riders and express services, and we use this route. It's been very successful over the years, and customers have gotten used to that. We now want to take it one step farther and sort of make the 79 express cashless.
Mr. Hughes, could you just describe a little bit where it looks like Montgomery County, Maryland? Does this route come downtown, or what jurisdictions does it involve?
Yes, I can. It starts at Silver Spring, Transit Center there. It basically comes down straight down Georgia Avenue, 7th Street to downtown, past here, and turns around Archives and goes back up north. It's just an express route going back and forth. Starts in Montgomery County and ends up downtown.
So it would affect D.C. and Maryland only. No, there's no Virginia connection to this, right?
Most of the riders are in the district, but there's a portion of the group that starts in Montgomery County, just to make sure that we're clear. As we do the pilot program, they'll only accept Smart Trip cards. Cash per payments will not be accepted, and customers will not be allowed to load value on the Smart Trip. For customers to add value on the Smart Trip, there are plenty of alternatives. The 70 line, as I mentioned, goes from stop to stop. They can ride the local route and add value on that. There are 6 rail stations that this service serves. They can always add value at rail stations. And there's also a number of other local retail locations. As we roll this program out, we want to do an extensive outreach program that includes outreach teams ahead of time on the buses, telling people what's coming, what they're going to have to do, where they can reload, how they get Smart Trip cards and everything else. When we started, we lost have teams at major bus stops so that they know the next bus is an express. It's 79 express. It's cashless only. The bus head sign will say express cashless only. We'll have signs at each stop so we can communicate to that to the customers. Also, doing a training program for our operators so that they can handle the situation. It's cashless. What do they do? Part of what we've included already is the de-escalation training that we're doing for all our operators, what to do. There's a conflict between operators and the customer. Lastly, just a little bit on timing. We're proposing this to start the program on June 24th. That's when we make all of our schedule changes, so we can tie into that. Throughout the program, we'll monitor running time, dwell time, ridership, fare revisions, headway adherence, customer satisfaction, and feedback on both the 79 and 70 to access the impact of the customers. What will they be doing differently as a result of this? We will have a public hearing late summer that's required from our jurisdiction as we're changing the types of fares that we're accepting. I'll come back to this committee in November to report on how the pilot's doing, which we've heard from the public, and also the Title VI analysis we're doing. And then when we come back presentation, what's next, including making the pilot, and ending the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hughes. And I see you have Ms. Mason with you to help answer questions. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. One question that I have is I just read in the paper about CVS is no longer going to provide smart cards, and I know that the intent here is to study the issue of essentially going to cashless buses on a wider scale. What has your group thought of as far as where the availability of smart cards would be provided in order to support this?
A couple things on this corridor. There are some CVS locations along the corridor that now sell the smart card and where people can enter. There are a number of other locations along the corridor. There's a number of giants. There's a Walmart. There's a CVS that does a lot of work up in Columbia Heights and Georgia Avenue. There's also a Walmart in Marion's Block that people can use. So there are some alternatives for people to use. We're trying to find other alternatives where people can do that. We hope to have some of those soon. But as I mentioned earlier, a 7-day line is probably going to be the hope line where people can get on and add value. The vast majority of what CVS is selling are passes as opposed to adding a value. So we're trying to work with how do you deal with selling more of our bus passes at various locations. Does that help?
Yes. Another question I had is on this particular line. What's the percentage between, cash payment versus using smart cards? Because both types of payments are allowed now, right?
Yes. On this particular line, there's only about 3% of the people that are using cash. There's about 7% of people that are adding value to the ticket when they're going on. This is one of our lower lines for cash, but we still believe that it can be an impact. It's a place to test what the project is. If we get, we're expecting small, but a 1 to 2 minute improvement on every bus trip that we put through the corridor on this, and that's one of the things that will be managed.
Okay. Other questions, Mr. Crawford?
I like the idea. What is the difference in cycle time, say, from Montgomery County down to the archives for the Metro Extra Bus 79 versus the regular bus? Just curious.
The Metro Extra saves about 15 minutes. It varies by time of day.
Sure.
Just during that, from one end to the other. As we implemented the Express, that's what we anticipated, and we've done a pretty good job. The afternoon PM peak is not as high, and recently we've had some construction on that corridor. It's not put down, but it's still on the Express.
And the on-time performance, is it comparable between the 79 and the other buses? Are they probably affected by the same kinds of things, I guess?
Yes, they're affected by the same thing. Actually, the Metro Express service is a little bit more reliable throughout the day, consistently, than the 70 lines, the 79 versus the 70. That's traditional. It does vary, but it tends to be a little bit more reliable for the extra because they're not making as many stops.
Okay. Just last thing, just a consideration. Perhaps even having and publicizing a separate metric for these Metro Extra buses as a way of sort of marketing and encouraging people to take them and to maybe be willing to go cashless.
That's, thank you for the suggestion, and you'll hear some of that when we come back later in a few months to explain all of our efforts with the ridership acts. Some of those thoughts are in there, I'm sure. There's more.
All right, excellent. Thank you much.
No questions. I think it's a good idea.
I just want to, again, commend the staff for this innovation. I think it's a step in the right direction and a good way to lay the groundwork for future innovations that are similar in concept to really expedite the service and make it easier for the passengers. I do want to just add.
So could we put the slide up, the last slide here, that shows staff recommendations? Okay, we have two recommendations here. First, to pilot a cash-free boarding on Metro Extra Route 79, and secondly, to authorize a public hearing on cash-free boarding on Route 79 and other Metro Extra and limited stop routes. So those are the recommendations of staff that we need to vote on to move forward to the full board. Correct? Good. All right, I'm doing it right, so that's good. So with that, do I have a motion to adopt these recommendations and move them to the full board from this committee?
Move approval.
Okay, and second? All right, I do want one bit of discussion here. This, we're talking about a public hearing, and this, although this Route 79 is in D.C. and Maryland, Virginia is also involved in any subsequent thing. So this would also include some public hearings in Virginia to address the same issue. Is that correct?
That's correct. The entire public involvement will be across all the jurisdictions, so we get comments from the public. When we do the public hearing, we'll advertise it in all three jurisdictions.
So any other discussion? Any other questions? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion is passed. We'll move that forward to the full board. Thank you very much for your report. All right, we'll move on to the next item. And Ms. Mason, you're here for the preventative maintenance update. Sorry about that. And Mr. Off, and we have Mr. Wiedefeld here to talk about that. So let's move on to the preventative maintenance update. Mr. Wiedefeld.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your flexibility. We were doing another presentation that on the platform issue that I wanted Annie to be part of, because it does reflect our way of thinking now, which is engineering doesn't do things in a vacuum. It has to be tied to operations, and we want to make sure that we're always communicating that way. So I appreciate that. Before I turn it over to Andy and Laura, I did want to thank them and their entire team for standing up the preventive maintenance program in such a short time frame. As you're about to see in the presentation, they made great progress in the last 9 months of a two-year effort. And it does reflect, it's starting to reflect in the quality of service for our customers with almost 9 out of 10 trips on time. And more importantly, it's reduced emergency calls on the system during service hours, and that's huge for our customers not to have to endure those types of issues. And then it's, at the end of the day, it's going to make us a much safer system going into the future to have this program in place. So we are recommending that we continue this for the full 2 years, and we revisit it at the end of that period as well. I also wanted to thank Andy and his team. As you know, there was a major fire last night. It started at just before 5 o'clock, and his team and the entire team worked through. We were on the call until almost 9 o'clock last night working that issue. Got up at 3 a.m. this morning to prepare for that. So Andy made a little worn down because he's been running that. But that just shows you the commitment that we have across the board in everything we do to make sure the system's safe. And he's made some tough decisions even during that little exercise that we just went through, that incident. But it just reflects our culture now of we're going to keep the people safe. We're going to make sure the system's safe before we operate it. So I just want to thank him publicly. So with that, I'll turn it over to Andy for the presentation.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Moving to the first slide, of course, purpose in accordance with Resolution 2016-52 is to provide a comprehensive update on our preventive maintenance program, and then also to seek the board's approval to continue throughout fiscal year 19. How did we get to the preventive maintenance program? In June of 2016, we commenced a year-long SafeTrack program. The most important lesson we learned from that is that we cannot allow it to happen again. And the way you do that is you get out in front of the issues that caused us to launch SafeTrack, and that's all about doing preventative work and taking care of our failures before they negatively impact our customers. In December, myself and Ms. Mason came to the board and laid out the different elements of our new preventive maintenance program, which was ultimately adopted to include reduce passenger service hours so that we could adequately execute those tasks. In July, those hours took effect and our preventive maintenance program launched. And here we are in May of 2018, where we're proud to show the board some of the positive results that have been born from this program. I'm now going to hand it over to Ms. Mason, who's really been, carrying the load here from a technical perspective, and she'll be talking about some of the critical elements of the program.
Thank you, Mr. Rob. Good morning. What you see on the screen before you and in the slide is the progress of our six main EM programs. They are grouped into two categories. The first three are targeting reduction of electrical fires, and the second three are targeting track defects. For context, before I dive into the details, I want to draw your attention to the columns that are presented here. We have the PM title, we have the purpose of each program. Importantly, we have the time it takes to complete a system-wide pass. The second to last column shows our scheduled performance for this year, so what we plan for FY18 and how we're going to complete that through March 31st. And the final column is percent complete of the system. So this shows how much of this PM program we have been able to exercise throughout the system. As you can see, some of these we will complete this year, but many of these programs require multiple years, up to 5 years, to complete one full pass of our Metro Rail system. So coming back to the two groups, looking first at electrical fire, the PM programs that address electrical fires. Generally, we are doing well against the plan. Cable measuring is right on schedule, and straight current testing is now slightly ahead of schedule for FY18. For the track bed cleaning, we have had some impact due to the prioritization of the curtain routing pilot project on the red line. That blocked some of our crews' access to that section, and it also required their support of that program. We think this was an important trade-off to make, as we believe that solving water intrusion issues is the way to go to reduce our effort in track bed cleaning in the long run. Second part, this program is the track bed cleaning program is cleaning and advanced straight current testing. Straight current testing program is on schedule in terms of number of segments completed. We had to resequence it within the program and change our approach, which ultimately ended up in doing some of the shorter segments first. We are not concerned about this from a safety perspective, but it did reduce the amount of cleaning required to be done through March of this year. With no concerns, we will be able to keep up the cleaning before the straight current testing. Moving to the track defects grouping, again, we have three programs here, switch maintenance, torquing, and tamping. These are all about getting ahead of the causes of delays that are associated with defects in our track infrastructure. The variance of the plan that you see in these programs is primarily driven by changes in program execution strategy. On switch maintenance, the change is actually a positive one. We shifted from having a dedicated crew working across the system to dividing this up into the regions, getting more people focused on it, and saving our welders for where the work was really needed. So we are, as you can see, well above schedule here, and we've already completed half of the system. This is both more efficient and more effective. On the torquing program, here you can see that we are behind schedule for FY18. This is partly driven by some new machines that we were acquiring for FY18 that we thought would improve productivity. Fortunately, those new tools did not work as expected, and so the team has been challenged to meet its production targets. We are putting more crews out there, we've engaged in contractor resources, and our recovery schedule would probably not meet our plan in full for FY18. However, what I think is important to do is to shift our focus and look at the impact. Are these programs actually working as expected? Taking first that electrical fire incident, I just want to make a note here that in the earlier briefing from Mr. Lavin, he noted an 8% reduction of all fires in the Q3 Metro Performance Report. Here we
out and do emergency work. An example of that would be in last week. We discovered two defective fasteners near Farragut North. We had to single track around that briefly. We were able to install a temporary repair, but that still required a speed restriction. And then that evening, we had to kick out the work groups who were scheduled to be there so that we could go in and effect permanent repairs. So that's an example of the type of work that we've reduced by 60% during the course of July through March of this fiscal year relative to the previous fiscal year. Using our non-passenger time more effectively, here what it shows is the number of work wrench hours that we've worked July through March of this fiscal year compared to pre-SafeTrack. FY16, we've done 34% more work. This is crews in the field. Doesn't include setup and getting there. This is actually, torquing fasteners, changing ties, and the good work we need to do to keep our equipment safe and reliable. The factors there, we do have 24% more non-passenger time than we did during FY16, but certainly I think we're showing that there are some internal efficiencies we've gained through other processes and procedures that have allowed us to increase our work hour productivity by 34%, more than the amount of time that was given for that function. In conclusion, we are progressing, but we certainly need to continue. We're seeing positive results. As Laura noted, a lot of the negative events are down, fires, track defects. We are getting, less emergency work that we need to take care of. Customers are getting better rail service, and we believe firmly that the PM program is a major contributor to that more positive customer experience, which includes the best customer on-time performance, tap in, tap out, than we've ever seen, dating all the way back to FY11 when that was first measured. And also a rather significant improvement in customer satisfaction from 69 to 76%. So we are progressing. We're not there by any stretch. We believe the program, is taking hold and proving beneficial. So our recommendation, based on this information, is that the board approves the continuation of the reduced span of service for fiscal year 2019 to allow the PM program to achieve its intended objective. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. This is an important discussion, and I ask that we go over the quarterly Metro Performance Report first, because that's really, really the results of the hard work that you're doing in trying to improve the state of good repair of Washington Metro. And I think it's very important to understand that those good reports are connected to the time and effort that's made to repair the system and bring it up to a state of good repair. This is something that was ignored for a number of years and really responsible for some of the issues that we had encountered just a couple of years ago when service was falling off and we were having lots of events that needed to be prevented. So. Thanks for this. We have a recommendation here to approve continuation of the reduced span of service for fiscal year 2019 so that you can continue this program. I wanted to go just to Mr. Wiedefeld quickly just to give you a chance to tell us how important this is to this program and how important it is to you personally.
No, it's critical, as Mr. Off just outlined. We are trying to take this agency from that's a reactionary to a proactive agency, obviously for our customers. And the more that we get ahead of issues in non-revenue periods, the better product we produce for them day to day. It's really to the core of the credibility of the agency. It's core to the culture, the safety culture that we're pushing in the agency. And by showing that this is what is important to us, I think reflects that both internally and externally. So I would strongly recommend that we continue the program through the final 2 years or through the final 15 months.
Thank you. Mr. Crawford, do you have any questions?
No, other than just a comment, I think it's the right thing to do. It looks like we've made good use of the time, the additional time. Nicely done.
Yes, I want to thank the general manager for taking this step. I think it's a very important one. I think it has been demonstrated. You can find all different ways to address some of these issues, but unless we stay on top of all of it in order to make the system a reliable system, this is what is needed to get it back to the stage. I would urge that we message as best we can. I think when we had the earlier introduction of the subject matter, everybody responded, of course, negatively, because they've heard the difficulty that it can be. But I think the difficulty is, I think, worth taking in order for us to start where we need to be in the long run. And as much as I think all of us as a board can do is to help around, I think one of the things that is important is that usually these discussions are outside of the metro discussions. You're in other venues, and so people's reactions are going to be different. But I think what we get out of this explanation and following through on how this work is done, that we become the encouragers that if we want Metro to continue and work toward being a reliable and a safe system to run, that this is the important parts that you must do in order to get there and continue it on a sustainable basis. So I think it's the right thing to do. I just think we really do have the opportunity to help message this so that people do understand really that this isn't about you making some choice that was in the air, but it is really a reliable choice that you've made.
Any other comments, questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes.
I just wanted to thank Chairman Evans, because obviously a big part of this program was dealing with the weekend, you know, earlier closures. And I know the impact that has, you know, on the district for both Jeff and the chairman. I just want to express my appreciation for the support of the program.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. So we have a recommendation from staff, and it's shown up on the screen here, to approve continuation of the reduced span of service for fiscal year 2019 to achieve two-year program objective. And so this committee needs to vote on that to move it forward to the full board. So I need a motion on that recommendation.
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
And a second? And any more discussion on this? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the resolution passes, and this will be moved up to the full board. That's the last of the information or the agenda for today, but I do want to once more acknowledge Pat Lavin, who said today is his second year anniversary in Washington Metro. And one day. Okay, yesterday. So I want to congratulate him. You know, I'm a chief safety officer also, and sometimes we sit in the go seat when things go wrong. You know, we go. So congratulations, 2 years at Metro. And I want to thank Mr. Wiedefeld for bringing in such a capable team. You know, I don't know all of them. I know Pat very well. I know Joe Leader. And Mr. Wiedefeld, is always a pleasure to work with you. A very strong team that's really helped us move forward. So. You know, Pat's been a pleasure to work with the last couple of years, and I really appreciate the things that he's putting in place, and I wish him success in a long and fruitful career here at Washington Metro. So thank you very much, Pat, for your two-year anniversary. With that, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Adjourned.